Greetings one and all. Welcome to Turkey Book Talk. I'm the host, William Armstrong. In this podcast, I talk to authors about newly released books on Turkey and its region, which I've reviewed in the Hürriyet Daily News. You can subscribe on iTunes, Podbean or Stitcher, or you can follow via the Turkey Book Talk Facebook page or my website, armstrongwilliam.wordpress.com. You can also support the podcast via my Patreon account, making a monetary donation, small or large, on a per episode basis. Find details on all the Turkey Book Talk pages or on my website. But now let's get on with the show. In this episode, I speak to Maureen Freely, who's the translator of Sabahattin Ali's 1943 novel, Madonna in a Fur Coat, which has just been published by Penguin Classics, and which I reviewed for the Times Literary Supplement and the Hürriyet Daily News. The book, which describes the enigmatic love affair of a provincial Turkish man in Weimar, Berlin, has become one of the most surprising recent publishing phenomena. Selling a quarter of a million copies in each of the past 3 years in Turkey, it's clearly striking a chord with a new generation of readers, 70 years after it was first published. I started by asking Maureen Freely what's behind this recent rise in popularity.
You tell me. You can only guess. So the book touches people, particularly young people. It is a book about, an earlier phase in what you might call the Turkish German friendship, a phase that we'd sort of forgotten about, and it takes place in that. And neither Raif Bey nor Maria fit into the stereotypes, gender stereotypes, that have been imposed on them. I think that is probably one of the main reasons why a new generation of readers, particularly young readers, really, really respond to it. I think it's easier for, if it were set in the present, I don't think it would be as powerful to them. The fact that it's taking place in a lost and forgotten age, but it has fully explored a problem that's central in their lives and all our lives. We're completely mired in questions of gender that we have a very, very hard time understanding, let alone discussing. And this is a case of two people, the man who's very soft and quote-unquote feminine, the woman who is rejecting all the stereotypes of femininity, and the friendship and the love between them that is more platonic than not. And also, this is my idea, I haven't heard anybody else discuss it, the tragedy of letting family obligations and societal obligations end it. You know, that the lack of courage or the lack of wherewithal to actually carry on with this beyond a secret or a private interlude. The demands of family and society are too readily accepted, and therein lies the loss. And I think probably a lot of readers in Turkey, starting with Turkey, fear this in their future, and so they respond to it. And also, it's a very beautifully written book, beautifully constructed book, almost perfect in its construction, in its story within a story.
On a formal level, it appears quite conventional in a way. I mean, it doesn't. He's billed in the blurb to this English version as a quote pioneer of Turkish modernism, but actually the language that he uses in this novel, at least, is very simple and direct.
This is his language is really, really lovely in that it feels intimate, conversational. However, if you go and look at it, it's very, very carefully constructed. So there's a lot of art. I wouldn't say artifice, but a lot of art in the way that he creates that natural voice, that confiding voice. So he's, you know, structurally, he's using the story within the story. He's not making any, you know, Virginia Woolfian experiments. I think that matters less to us now than it might have done then. Many of us writing today only just managed to get away with the story, let alone anything more formally daring.
And Sabahattin Ali's life story is really fascinating as well. He was known as a dedicated socialist, and politics saturates much of his work. But at least on the surface, this novel is quite apolitical. If you scratch the surface, it's not. I mean, would you say that's a stimulating tension there in the text between this apparently simple storyline of a personal experience and these themes that he explores under the surface?
Well, this the book is, you know, the narrator of the book, if you like, as well as the author, have a very, they're very acute in their political observations, or their observations of politics as it resides at a particular time in a particular place. So the things that stay with me are the portrait that the narrator paints of early Republican Ankara, within all its the young city building it itself up with the huge buildings, the outlying neighborhoods that haven't been quite constructed yet, the bureaucratic arrogance, mercenary arrogance, and the both the narrator and Raifbe are totally miserable within this sort of Philistine city, if you like. When Raifbe takes his story back into the past, into Berlin of the interwar period, there's a fascinating account of life at the Pension, all of these, where he's saying all of these, the detritus of the war, if you like, widows and former colonialists who are all sitting there saying, just counting the days and until a strong man can come back and take Germany in hand and so on. Also, the warmth that the Germans and the Pension feel towards Turkey, Turkey as the ally in the war in which both both powers were defeated. The portrayal of the art world, very, very deft, the way that he describes the youth of the city, emaciated, still carrying all the scars of the war and drinking themselves into oblivion. The beautiful walks that they take. It's just so much a portrait of a particular city and a particular set of milieus at a particular time. Also the descriptions, although they're fleeting, of the Raifbe's home in the provinces and the ways in which he is destroyed by his own family when he returns at their behest. But I think the main thing that might have caused Sabahattin Ali some problems, both with his circle of writer friends on the one hand and with the general public on the other, is that he is not in this book writing for the struggle. He is doing something else. It reminds me, for example, of James Baldwin's Giovanni's Room, in which this is at a time when James Baldwin is becoming more and more central in the civil rights movement, but he writes a book about love that takes place in France. He's refusing to give up or hand over the art that is central to his life. He's not handing it over entirely to the struggle or entirely to the sorts of characters that might be preferred. And I think that's one reason why even today you'll hear people say, well, this book, Tout le monde pour la Madonna, is actually it's a schoolgirl's book. His important work lies elsewhere. Of course, when the book came out in Turkey in installments in the newspaper, it wasn't well received. He was the subject of hate campaigns at that time, in the manner that we're still familiar with. So he had, he was caught between two audiences that weren't particularly open to what he was trying to do at the time. But now that's different. Also, the example, the terrible legacy of his death, his shabby treatment by the authorities, well, more than shabby, criminal treatment, that still very much makes him, the writer that we could have embraced for many more decades, but lost.
And he was a satirist as well during his life in Turkey, and he edited this weekly magazine called Marco Pasha.
He had a very close circle of of friends who I'm sure kept each other going with humor in the same way that we see today. It's definitely a tradition, and I think the dissidents, writers, and journalists and activists today, they know where they learn the art. They learn the art with Sabahattin Ayub, Aziz Nesin, Nazım Hikmet, Orhan Kemal Tahir, so on and so forth. So it is. It's a sad thing that a country has to have a tradition like this. But I think of all of these writers and many more that I haven't mentioned as heroic and keeping the light. And often that's means by keeping things very, very light. Of course, we now know that, you know, satire has again become a very, very dangerous thing. You know, dictators don't like to be laughed at.
And I mean, the thing is, though, Madonna in the Fur Coat is not really full of laughs. It kind of stands in contrast to his satirical work. It's very serious and somber. There's not many jokes in it.
Yeah. It's I quite like that. I think that one of the worst things is to require oneself or others to be funny. Yeah, light all the time, funny all the time. In fact, I think often humor is much, much darker than tragedy. So I think it's very, it sits all too comfortably within a tragic view of life, or a heroic view of life, refusing to give up, refusing to give in, which is what Sabahattin Ali and his circle of writer friends did, and what those following in his footsteps continue to do.
Now, as you say, Sabahattin Ali was repeatedly prosecuted through his life, and he was even jailed in the early 30s. For writing a poem that was criticizing Ataturk. And he decided to flee Turkey in 1948, but Ankara wouldn't issue him with a passport, so he tried to employ a smuggler to get him over the border into Bulgaria. But he was killed by that smuggler while on the crossing, and there's still a lot of speculation about whether the smuggler was in the pay of the Turkish intelligence services. What do you think? Do you have any light to shed on this?
If only... I just, rather than try to explain what happened, it's one of those typical half-elucidated intrigues that we grow so all too familiar with if we have Turkey in our hearts. What stays with me is just what the poor man, how this writer who had to make a living from the Turkish state because he was a teacher, who was simply practicing, living by his ideals and practicing his art, who loved books, who who was reading, as I understand it, when his murderer hit him on the head with the shovels or whatever. This gentle soul. What drove this man? What was going on in this man's life that made him try to escape in that way? Why would any nation take one of its best writers and push them into that desperate situation? That's the question I ask. Not who did it, but why? Why do these things happen? And why are they continuing to happen? Why are there hate campaigns? You know, why do? Just imagine that this person was not in the pay of the authorities. Just imagine that he was doing this because he thought he was killing a traitor of Vatan Hain. What does that say? I mean, this is a very Turkish story. I'm aware that it's a story that has echoes many, many other places, including the country of my birth, including the country where I live, if you look particularly if you look at the whole colonial story. And it fills me with despair, but also admiration. I'm glad that the words survive. I'm glad that the stories survive. And I'm glad that the stories are not just about the political struggle, but they're about the things we set out to write about in the first place. He didn't set out to write about a political struggle. He set out to write stories about the world around him. That itself seems to be very, very dangerous if it's in a lot of parts of the world, if it's not the dominant narrative. Anyways, hope I don't sound too angry, but I am haunted by him. I am haunted by his end. The fact that his daughter was told, after he died, that she was advised by her own mother, you know, not to let anybody know who her father was, because it was that dangerous. You know, what a terrible thing. How good that we know about this story now. That gives you some faith in what literature can do over time.
And the fact that he's having a kind of renaissance now.
We all know the political story around him, but the fact that he's being remembered at the moment most for a story which is about two people who try to honor their principles and the love for each other, even though it's not the sort of love that we're supposed to be aspiring to. I like it that the personal is political, and never more than now. In Turkey, where questions of gender have taken a kind of an alarming U-turn in the last decade, and of course that's reflective in a lot of other writing as well. But if I were young in Turkey right now, I would I'd be wondering about these questions too, and I find some temporary refuge or inspiration in a book that is safe within its pocket of distant time, but you're raising all of these same dilemmas.
And just to conclude, just a word about the translation, because as we've said, his language was very simple and direct in this novel. But did the translation process throw up any particular challenges or surprises?
There were, of course, things that we don't have anymore. So there, they were terms that were specific to the time. I particularly remember Frank Gömlek, which you could translate. It's impossible to translate well because it's a French shirt, but in other words, it's not a traditional shirt. Frank is not French, it's Frankish, Western, European. But anyway, so that sort of thing is always difficult. Every book has them. Those words I felt added to my enjoyment. I could always go to other people to decide, what was the right or the least unright thing to do. But they added to the kind of the period charm of the piece now for me. I found, as always, what matters to me most is the voice. And this narrator's voice it's like honey. It really is. And so all I had to do was try to figure out how to get to that voice and how to recreate, its hush and its flow. And therein lies its truthfulness. I mean, not the translation, the truthfulness of the original text, which one tries to recreate as best one can.
That was Maureen Freely. You can find a link to my review of Madonna in a Fur Coat at armstrongwilliam.wordpress.com, where there's also an edited transcript of this interview. Don't forget you can subscribe to Turkey Book Talk through iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, or Facebook. If you like the podcast, please rate it on iTunes or Stitcher, which helps other people find the show. And if you have some spare change, do consider supporting the podcast via my Patreon account, donating on a per episode basis. Many thanks to current supporters Andrew Cruikshank, Özlem Bey Arslan, and Steve Bryant. Find links to all that on all the Turkey Book Talk pages, but in the meantime, thank you very much for listening.